Welcome to the HR Stories Podcast, Listener Question Edition, where there is a lesson in every story. Each week, the team at HR Stories Podcast shares questions from our podcast audience and provides tangible, practical advice that everyone can use to get HR right. Our hosts today are management and HR consultants Chuck Simikian and John Tallheimer. What is on your mind today?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the HR Stories Podcast, where there is a lesson in every story. I haven't said that in a while, Chuck. Chuck, how are you?
Fine. I was just letting you roll with it.
Going. I'm like, hey, wait, I don't get to normally say this. This is going to be good. That's fantastic. Yeah. I love it.
It sounded good. It felt good.
Oh, good. Well, you know, Chuck, I've been, I just completed a payroll law seminar literally a half an hour ago. So a full day payroll law seminar. We were out on the West Coast and there's big news. I know you heard, like, did you hear the big news today?
Yeah, it's been out for a bit, but I love breaking things down here on the HR Stories Podcast. So why don't you share what we are talking about? Because unless you've been under a rock for the last 2 weeks, under a giant HR rock, I guess, you don't know that the Department of Labor finally made their announcement.
Yeah, and so we're recording this on April 23rd. April 23rd. And on that day, they released their final rule to increase minimum salary requirements for the white collar exemptions, which includes executive, administrative, learned professional, creative professional, computers as well, I think, and outside sales. Well, outside sales never had a number on there, but so they're doing it. And so the final rule sharply increases the minimum salary level for white collar exemptions to apply, right? And so what's fascinating to me, Chuck, is when they did the proposal, they had a one-time number, right? They're going to do it once and that was it. And they didn't do that. They decided to do it twice over a six-month period. And so let me get my numbers right. I just want to make sure that I'm reading them. So right now, it's $684 per week or $35,568 per week. As of July 1st, 2024, it'll be $840 per week or $43,888 annually. And then January 1st, 2025, it'll be $1,128 per week or $58,656. That's a big change.
That's huge.
A big change. What's fascinated me and which you and I were kind of talking about beforehand is they're finally tying it to an exact number and they will revisit it every 3 years. So what they say is the one that starts in January is equivalent to the 35th percentile of weekly earnings of full-time salary workers in the lowest wage census area.
Okay.
That happens to be the South now. And so that's what it's going to be tied to. So they will look at that every 3 years and adjust accordingly. And so I think that's going to be a big change for people. And I think it may be challenging for people.
Yeah. I mean, I already see the emails coming out from different business groups, you know, we're going to fight this. And 58 grand, that's pretty darn high. You know, there's a lot of assistant manager, lower manager type jobs might be in the high 40s, low 50s or so. So it's going to be challenging. I know the American Hotel Lodging Association is looking to challenge it in court. They have a couple of reasons as far as they feel that they don't like the automatic updates. They feel it's going to drive hoteliers to, you know, increase costs. I joke that a salaried employee sometimes, it's like they do the work of three people though. That is one thing.
Right.
So now some of these salary jobs are going to have to be hourly jobs. So you have to have two, maybe three people. I joke, they have to hire someone, you know, three people to do one job at the hourly rate to avoid the overtime. But
yeah. And one of the things, so I went to their question and answer thing. So the Department of Labor did put out a rulemaking updating the mechanism, frequently asked questions. And so they estimate 4.0 million workers exempt under the current will change, right? So it's going to impact 4 million individuals in there as well. And so I think that is a lot, right? 4 million employees is a lot, and it's going to impact them. I do think that those individuals that are closer to the $1,123, I think a lot of them will end up going to be exempt, right? They'll just give them a salary bump up in there. So they're not getting that, right? And so they're not going to become non-exempt. They'll just get a bump, salary bump, to put them up there as well. So that'll be interesting to kind of see how that plays out.
Well, once again, whether you like it or hate it, you're going to have to deal with it. That's what we do with HR. Whether we like it, whether we hate it, whether we wish it would go away, it's not. So folks, stay tuned. You never know.
Our friend Todd was really good. I remember learning from him, and he was like, it doesn't matter what you think. It's the law. We need to follow the law.
Yeah.
And to your point, Chuck, this is going to, right. So I was reading a bunch of articles from lawyers, and a lot of them are like, this is going to be fought in court. This is going to go to court. So whether it becomes law and when does it start is still up in the air. But I do think employers need to start looking at this and start recalculating their budgets, relooking how this is going to impact their workplace, like the hotel association. And people are going to have to be doing things about it for sure. And, again, thinking about this, it's going to end up somewhere. And maybe it doesn't end up as high as it is now, but it's going to end up somewhere. And so I would just, if I was a business owner, I would start planning for it.
Yeah. So, absolutely. So outside of that, John, what else do you have? What do you have for us today? What's on tap? What's on store for episode 72, John? 72. We're getting up there. We're getting up there as major seniors.
Yeah, this is nuts. So I know it's so funny. So I didn't show this to you, but there was a post on, I think it was our Facebook group, right? The team of HR one, the team of one. Facebook group, and they were talking about dealing with office gossip. And so they had this infographic that came out, and it said four different things. And I want to get your opinion on those things. And I know I'm throwing this to you without you seeing it. But so talk to the manager to sort out issues is number one. Focus on solutions, not problems. That makes sense. Deal with the issues, not with the person. Okay, I'm still there. And then the last one is keep your public and private life separate.
Oh.
I don't know. I just don't know if that's realistic.
I don't think it's as realistic as it was back 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, where people didn't know anything about anyone else. But unless you are completely off all social media, It does get blended. It does get blended.
Well, and it gets blended, but it also gets blended with you're just having conversations with people in the workplace, and somebody goes, "Oh, what did you do this weekend?"
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right.
What are you going to say? Well, it's none of your business, right? Yeah. Or you're going to be like, "Oh, I just stayed at home," right? Yeah. And so people share that information. I don't want to use it as an example, but I was thinking of a conversation we were having beforehand. Right. And so those things happen. Right. And so we have those connections with people in the workplace and people get to know. And, if I tell somebody in the workplace, they're not keeping that to themselves. They're going to talk to somebody else who's going to talk to somebody else. Right. And so I just think that's a hard thing to have a hard line on for sure. And then social media on top of that.
Yeah.
As well. No, I think is a big thing in there. So
yeah. I used to work with a guy named Russ. Russ, how you doing, Russ?
I know, Russ.
Russ basically would show up to work. He'd say, "I'm here to do my job," and go home. And then years later, there's a character on Parks and Rec named Ron Swanson. And I played by what, Nick Offendorf or whatever. And I thought that is Russ to a T. You know, behind the scenes, Russ was a dad with a baby and he was a big mushy little, but at work, wouldn't talk to anyone, when it came to work, do his job, go home. So anyways, I don't know how you do that. It's the only person I ever saw that could separate himself like that.
Yeah, and people do it. I mean, I've worked with people like that. And it's more like, I'm just not getting involved. Like, I'm not going to go out for company parties. I'm not going to go to a bar with people and do that. Some of the best teams I worked in were the ones that went out. So one of my best favorite teams, we would go out every Friday night, celebrate the week. Kind of doing that on there as well.
They don't do that anymore. Bar owners are worried. I read an article about that. Bar owners are worried about
the, going out.
The after hours, happy hour type stuff. So,
oh, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
What else do you have for us today, John?
So I have one other thing, and I sent you this article. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but 15 reasons company don't want to hire us, old people. People over 50.
Are there really, and I thought they 50 were interesting reasons? 15
no,
reasons.
No, not 15.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go through all of them, but there was a couple of them that I thought were interesting on there. Perceived threat to younger employees. I'm not really sure what the perceived threat is, right? I mean, again, it's experience. I always think about, I'm not hiring a person's age. I'm hiring whether they can perform the job or not. That's what I do. Social dynamics and ageism. There is definitely ageism in the workplace where, like, oh, we can't hire them. They're not going to fit in. They're not going to have the technology, that kind of stuff. And I think we need to go beyond that and really go in and do that skill-based hiring. Can they do it? Can they manage to do that as well? There is this one I think is legitimate, higher perceived cost.
Oh,
it's going to cost more to hire that individual than it would be like somebody out of college or something.
Okay. You mean a higher wage or might cost more on benefits or, you know, overall? Okay.
Yeah. So that to me makes sense. And so I see that. The other one is that desire for long-term commitment, right? And I laugh at that one, especially in today's age, because when you look at people in their 20s and 30s, that have no responsibilities, they'll leave a job like that. They're like, I'm leaving. I'll go find another job. And so we do know that individuals who have family ties are much more likely and stable in the workplace. So I don't know. Like, that to me doesn't balance out.
But it sounds like they're saying, you're older, so you're not going to be around long. You're probably going to want to retire in 10 or 15 years. I'm thinking, anyone that stays 10 or 15 years in any job and, you know, this day and age, they're a lifer. I mean, what the heck?
Right. that's what I was saying. I think the average tenure of most employees is probably up 5 or 7. But, you know, there are a group of people that leave after 1 year, 2 years, right? And they go in the next job and the next job. I don't think, you know, seeing somebody come in and go, hey, I want to get hired and I'm going to come in and I'm going to spend the rest of my, you know, my rest of my career at your company for 5-7 years. I don't know. I don't see the downside of it. Again, it's about performance to me. It always has. Age doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Either way. So doing that. Anyway. All right. So Chuck, are you ready for some questions?
Was that 15 reasons or those are just the top ones you picked?
I want to go and read all 15. I thought that might be a little excessive to do on air.
Oh yeah.
That was the top.
Sure. Well, I will tell you, I have seen where sometimes it takes a special person to fit. Like we hire a lot of bellmen, or the bellmen tend to be younger, and you hire an older person into that mix. As the HR person, I'm always concerned, are they integrating with that person? Is that person integrating with that? Are they building a cohesive team? Normally it works out okay. You know, people aren't rude to the older people or whatever, but I'm always just a little worried sometimes about that. you know, so.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, but it doesn't stop me from hiring anyone at that age. So.
Yeah. No, of course not. Oh, wait. So you brought up a story for me. So I was working at this company and one of my co-managers hired this individual who was, I think he was like 57. And he took this job, right? And everyone else was probably, I want to say 30 and younger, like mostly around in the 20s. And he hired him into this role. And I found out later he had been a chief executive at a broadcasting company. He had retired, but he had to come back to work to have health insurance for his wife. His wife was really sick. And he was such a great worker. And he came in and he was like, he knew, like, this is my job. And now think about that, right? High level executive coming in at a low entry level job, you know, I just love it. I love that his story was so compelling to me.
Excellent. So questions. You have answers. Or I have questions.
We'll
you
see.
Have answers. And
we'll see.
Yeah, well, you know what? I know that you're the I-9 expert, even though you never wanted to wear that badge. Somehow you became the I-9 expert. You've taught classes on it. I love that. And our first question here was, do I need to get a new I-9 for an employee who just became a citizen? You know, they previously had, and they used the term in the question, green card, which some of the cards still are green, by the way. Some are pink, some are green, but they previously had a green card. What do you think, John?
Yeah, so the green card is the permanent resident card, which allows a non-citizen to be a resident of the United States and authorized to work in the United States. And so when an individual, what the I-9 is asking us is to verify their identity and their authorization to work in the United States. And so as long as we do that, when they first come in, if their status, they become a citizen,
right,
we don't need to go back to the I-9 form and change it or move it or do any of that, right? So it's nothing that we need done there. I don't even know if I would note it. That's nice. That's great. Congratulations. You're a citizen now. But I don't know. You don't need to go back and change the I-9 at all.
No. Unless there was some sort of expiration date on that card, and then you had to go back and recertify, re-verify. So, okay.
Right, so if they're a non-citizen with authorization to work in the United States until a certain period, then we would have to do the whole re-verification section. Wait, sorry, not section 3, supplement B. Sorry, look at me going back to old terminology. So,
okay, I got question number 2. An employee asked me if an exempt employee has to work 40 hours on a regular basis. This is Sebastian from Maine. Sebastian, how you doing out there? Thanks for the question.
Oh, wow.
So this person was actually a non-exempt employee. So a non-exempt employee, hourly employee, asked Sebastian, does an exempt employee have to work 40 hours on a regular basis?
Yeah, and to me, right, that underlying thing is like, why is a non-exempt employee asking about an exempt employee, right? And so my mind goes, oh, there is an exempt employee. They're not working 40 hours on a regular basis.
Exactly. And
I want to get them. I want to go after them. I want to do that.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Chuck's giving the old face look, right? But maybe they were like, well, I want to be promoted into an exempt role and I want to know, am I going to have to work 40 hours on a regular basis, right? And so when we think about the exempt employee, it's not hourly. We don't care how many hours they work. We care whether they're handling their responsibilities, right? And so if that takes 30 hours and they get it done in 30 hours, fantastic. If they take 40 hours, fantastic. 50 hours, fantastic. 60 hours, not so fantastic. But hey, that's what an exempt employee signs up for. It's, again, if they're getting paid based on responsibility and not hours. And so again, it's going to be corporate culture too, and what is the expectation for those employees. I had a bunch of exempt managers when I was at my highest corporate level, and it wasn't that they were required to work 40 hours, but they were required to make sure they were available to their staff members who worked 40 hours. Right. And so we were also in a situation where we were working 24/7. Right. And so there was always somebody there. So as an exempt employee, you always had individuals working every day of the week, any time of the night. And so you were always on call to handle all those kind of things. So I don't know. What do you think, Chuck? Anything you want to add to that?
I sometimes joke that overtime, exempt employees get OT also. It's called own time. Own time. And so, yes, I guess it depends, like you said, on the company culture and such. But for the most part, every place I've ever worked, exempt employees are required to work usually 45 to 50 hours a week. The idea is you come in at, let's say, 8 o'clock, and you don't work an 8-hour day, you work a 9-hour day, because you're going to work 8 hours plus through your lunch. So, yeah, but I think you're right. I think the person asked this question probably saw exempt employee that would, and I got to tell you, sometimes you work 40, you 50 hours, sometimes you work 38, because, hey, I took off, I went to the doctor, I got sick half the day, So those things happen. But it just, like you said, it all depends on the company culture and what their expectations are. But we do calculate everything based on 40 hours. So there we go.
Well, in terms of overtime, right? But full time can be anything the company sets it at.
Exactly. Right?
And so it could be 32, it could be 36, it could be 50 if they want to pay the overtime. Like, hey, our work schedule is 50 hours a week. And so just kind of paying attention to that.
Yeah. And there's those companies that have the 4-day work week, and I don't think they're making their people work 10 hours a day, 9 hours, eight
some
hours.
Some of them are, some of them are.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
That's all great. Right.
Good.
Next
question.
Question 3. How to create. Oh, Jamie from Florida. Jamie says, hey, how do you create a suitable employee handbook for our company? Wow.
Yeah. I call Chuck up and I say, hey, Chuck, we need to get an employee handbook here. It's interesting because there are so many employee handbook templates that are out there. We know of an organization that has an employee handbook creator, which is the one that I use in my business most of the time. So I use that. Employment lawyers can do it. And I think what it comes down to is cost. And what are you going to use that employee handbook for?
Yeah.
Right. And so obviously, if all the money in the world, I would hire an employment lawyer to do it. If you don't have all the money in the world, I would either use a template or a program to create that. So if you have a third party payroll company, they probably have something. I don't think I would ever try to start one from scratch.
No. Most of us have worked at other companies where we could, use our old handbook and kind of look, I've read so many handbooks and worked at a number of companies as a HR director and as a consultant. It's almost like they all look the same. They read the same. It's like, I don't know, some caveman started an employee handbook and we've all been using the same template, just been refining it for thousands and thousands of years. But Jamie's lucky that Jamie, I'm going to guess she, but it could be he. Jamie is from Florida, so there aren't a lot of state laws, but obviously make sure you know your state laws, use your handbook creator, whatever you choose. And then when you're done, always run it by an attorney. Yeah.
Bingo. Yeah. I mean, again, I think, we give a lot of advice out here, but I always tell people you got to run it by your employment lawyer. But it's better to build it than ask them to build it, right? Because they're going to bill you at $100, $200 an hour, $300 an hour. And if you can build it and get it to a condition where they can just go through it quickly, yep, this is right, this is right. Oh, don't forget, we're in Orlando. There's a special rule about this. Always kind of good to do that as well.
Yeah. John, I got a philosophical question for you. I know you had thrown this out there one time, and with layoffs going on, people are looking at ways to do certain things. Some companies cut costs by laying people off, but You brought something up, a philosophical question about, would you be willing to reduce your salary by 20% to save other people's jobs? I found that
interesting. Yeah, and so, yeah, so there was an article I was reading where this company made the decision to reduce salary, I think it was by 20%, so it doesn't have to lay anybody off, right? And there was, I think it was Southwest Airlines, for most of their life, I think they changed this recently, have never had a layoff, just never had a layoff. Even when economic times are down, they shuffled people and moved people around, but they never laid people off. They have, you know, done some, you know, asked people to retire or whatever, right? And so, but, so it's fascinating, like, it's kind of like that mentality to be like, would I reduce my own personal salary so somebody could save their job? And it's hard for me to answer that, Chuck. I don't know where you feel, because my first reaction is, of course, that's the right thing to do. And I would probably do it because that's probably my mentality. But then I start thinking about, like, if I'm in that role of HR director, and I'm going to roll this out to my team, I put myself into somebody's place where maybe they're an hourly worker, right? Maybe they're an hourly worker, they're a bartender. And I'm going to ask them, bartender's probably not a good example, but I'm going to ask them to reduce their salary. And they're having a hard enough time scraping by. Yeah. I don't like that. That's where I get caught up. Like for me, if I'm on the high level, I'm an executive or I'm the HR director, and I'm feeling comfortable with my salary. Okay, 20%, I'm going to save people's jobs. Great. It's going to look good. But then when I start thinking about that individual on the front line, that makes me hesitate.
Yeah. I was in a position back in the 2008 timeframe when the stock market crashed, and it was a big deal. And our company did take salaried employees, I think reduced by 5 or 10%. And that was able to, I mean, you can only save so many paper clips, and we were able to save some jobs in that way. But if you do, it has to be across the board. It can't be a voluntary thing. So,
all right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, again, I've heard that where at a certain level, everyone takes that there. I think the challenge with that is that's fine for a year. Right. But then you come back to me the next year and go, look, you're not going to get a raise. And the year after that, in this economy, I'm going to be like, well, I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right. Where's my loyalty to the company? I don't know.
Yeah.
And maybe they're happy that I leave. I don't know. Those were great questions, Chuck. Yeah. I love that we had that conversation. And I just want to go back to what we started with in the beginning. If you haven't done your research about the final ruling of the Department of Labor of the white collar exemptions, make sure you do it. Make sure you're addressing it, creating your budgets, and figuring that out. It's a big change. And so it's going to have some ramifications across the board. And of course, as Chuck said, there's going to be some court battles.
Yeah. And thanks for listening to the HR Stories podcast, where there's a lesson in every story. Stay tuned for next week. We've got a really neat, new, interesting format. We've got three stories, three questions, but three stories with each question. So, or one story with each question. So three questions, three stories.
Yes. And if you haven't already, make sure that you like us. Tell people about us, get us out there. We're trying to expand this and reach as many people as possible. We need your help to do that. Please don't hesitate to do that. And if you have any questions, please email us at email@team@hrstories.com. We want to answer your questions. And if there's any way we can help your business, please let us know.
See you next week, folks.
Thank you for listening to the HR Stories podcast. The material presented in this podcast is for informational purposes only. Chuck and John always recommend using an employment lawyer or HR consultant to handle any legal concerns or HR issues. We do our best to double check sources and make sure the information we are providing is accurate. We may eliminate or embellish without changing the basic narrative to make the story easier to understand. In certain circumstances, we may change identifying information to protect the innocent. The HR Stories broadcast is brought to you by the team at HR Stories. The team at HR Story is designed to help anyone with HR responsibilities be better at managing the employee experience. To engage with us, go to the HRStoriesTeam.com and learn more about how the team at HR Stories can support your business or nonprofit. Thank you for listening to the HR Stories podcast, where there is a lesson in every story.